Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodhi, and I am your host, and I'm talking a little bit quieter than I normally would because it's late, and I don't want to wake anybody up. So you got my like smooth jazz at 2 a.m. voice, which, you know, isn't a lot different than my normal voice. It just happens to be a little bit quieter. Before we jump into the show, I just want to take a moment to thank the two people who purchased items off of the merchandise store. Right now, there's only like, there's two cups. There's one white and one black and some t-shirts that are pretty much say all of the same thing. And honestly, I just kind of put them up there and I just kind of thought that I would get feedback and then I can change things to the way people like them. And two people purchased something. I know who one of them is, but I really appreciate you going to the store and actually purchasing something. That just kind of floored me. It made my whole week. And because of your support through Patreon, PayPal, and advertising and actually making purchases on the merch store, which the link is in the show notes, I was actually able to upgrade my preamp. And when I say upgrade, it's actually the device that I upgraded to is a Wave XLR. It's a $150 preamp. There was a $30 off deal on Amazon. So I actually got this thing, for $120, and I think it sounds great. I think it sounds way better than the Universal Audio, which is much more expensive. So I'm pretty happy with it. And this was a recommendation given by Allison and Steve Sheridan. So thank you to them for the recommendation. Yeah, I'm really happy with it. Like, I haven't even really dug into it, but it so far it's awesome. This week, we have some quick news, and most of this news that I'm about to give you was supposed to be in last week's show, and for whatever reason, I only gave you the Tesla news, so sorry about that. I don't know where my head was at. So we're going to dig into some news, and then we're going to get into the Tesla earnings call, which was probably one of the best earnings calls in recent years. Like, I was really curious to see if Elon would show up because of all this Twitter stuff, and he's been on the TED Talks, and you know, it's just been Elon everywhere recently. And he did, and he was a very subdued Elon. And the best part of this earnings call is the behind-the-scenes stuff that we're going to hear. So let's go ahead and jump into our news so we can get to the best part of the show, which is the earnings call. Ford followed Tesla into the EV market, and now they are copying Tesla by raising prices of the Mach-E. The Mach-E now starts at $61,900, or 47,530 pounds, which is about a $7,800 increase or a 6,000 pound increase. The catch is with this, the increase is only taking place in the UK. So if you're in the United States, you're safe, but still a price increase. Continuing on with the Mach-E news, Ford is no longer taking orders for the following models of Mach-E: the Premium, the California Route 1, and the GT Performance Mach-E. In other words, they're just sold out for 2022. They're just done taking orders. Although you can try to find one at a dealership, but you can't direct order one. So the Select and GTs are the only Mach-Es available still to buy, But I went to Ford's website, and even those models were you couldn't order them directly. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But I mean, I guess kind of a good thing for Ford, because they're the car's selling so well. It's they're sold out, but kind of a bummer for Mach-E fans. And then some good news for Ford Lightning reservation holders. Ford's going to hold a launch event on April 26th, which is in just a few days. And we will be sure to cover it here on this podcast. Lots of stuff coming up. I've got some really good stuff that Steve Sheridan sent over that I'm going to cover next week. There's so much news right now. It's like every time I turn around, there's a big news story. So that's pretty exciting. Moving on to Fisker has announced a headquarters in India, and you know, we can only assume they're going to build cars and sell cars there as well. Let's see. Volkswagen is beefing up the range of their EV platform, which is the MEB platform. They hope to increase range of the MEB platform to a maximum of 700 kilometers or 435 miles, which would be really cool, but also seems like that's a really lofty goal. In addition to the range boost, VW is also looking at boosting the charging speed to over 200 kilowatts. Currently, right now on their platform, it's only 125 kilowatts, so that's pretty good news for them. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 has won Car of the Year at the New York International Auto Show. This car is so darned impressive. Like, there's so many good things about this car. Like I say over and over again, like, if the Cybertruck doesn't happen, I would be more than happy to buy a Kia or a Hyundai Ioniq 5 or even a Kia EV6. But just recently, Kia announced the EV9, which is their big SUV, which is about the size of a Telluride, or it is the size of a Telluride. It's just the electric version of it. And the Telluride is a really nice vehicle, and it's going to start at $50,000. So my wife thinks the Ioniq 5 is maybe a little bit ugly, but I think she'd really like the look of the Kia. It's a good-looking car, that EV9. Another Hyundai news, they are also planning on building an EV assembly plant and battery factory in the United States. We just don't know where at this point. They do have a big plant in Montgomery, Alabama, so maybe that somewhere around there. But then again, maybe it might be somewhere on the West Coast. Who knows? Honda will invest $40 billion into EVs, and $40 billion seems like a very impressive number. But when you look at Honda and how they've kind of positioned themselves for the EV market, I believe that they're behind. That's just my opinion from what I see in the market. I think Honda's way far behind, and they're doing everything they can, like working with Sony, and I have another story about them here shortly, to kind of bolster their position in the market, which is currently very weak. They are going to continue building hybrids until the 2030s. So you can kind of see where that's going with Honda, but they will stop producing any gasoline powered vehicles by the 2040s, which I guess is good. I'm glad to see Honda kind of drawing a hard line in the sand, you know, 2040. It's not that far away, only 18 years Honda. Honda will also be investing $250 million into solid-state battery technology. Honestly, that number seems pretty low, but they're going to invest $250 million in that. And I told you that story, so I could tell you this one. General Motors, LG Chem, and Honda are teaming up to create an EV modular architecture that will allow for a series of vehicles under $30,000, which is... I'm on board with this. This sounds awesome. To be clear, though, they're not creating an EV together. They're just sharing technology. And it sounds like GM's Ultium battery platform, and Ultium uses the pouch technology for the cells, which I believe Hyundai uses as well, Hyundai and Kia. But according to a Popular Science article, the advantage of the pouch cells over the cylindrical is that they're safer, allegedly. When a pouch cell fails, it'll like kind of bulge, and then that's, you know, the heat will dissipate better than the cylindrical cells. I'm going to have to look into this further, to be honest with you. I just read the article real quick. The other advantage of the pouch cells is that they are cheaper and more versatile than the cylindrical cells. All right, this is our final story before we get to the Tesla earnings call. So let's switch gears here. That was hard for me to say. You have no idea how many times I had to re-record that little bit. So we're going to switch gears to space. And I want to thank Chip for passing this article along to me. I think it's pretty cool. So we all know when SpaceX does a big rocket launch and they bring their, I don't even know what we're calling them, astronauts from their safe enclosure to the not as safe capsule, they're riding in a modified Model X. So we've all seen that. It's pretty iconic. It's pretty cool when they do this. Well, not to be outdone, NASA has announced that the Artemis astronauts will be transported from their crew quarters to Launch Pad 39 via a specially designed canoe transport vehicle. This is so cool. It's freaking canoe. Like, I love this company, but I honestly did not think that they were going to exist much longer than a blip in the EV world. But it looks like, from the picture that Chip sent along, that Canoe's lifestyle vehicle will be modified. So if you don't know what this vehicle looks like, it kind of looks like a lunar rover mixed with a minivan. So I would highly suggest going to Canoe's website, C-A-N-O-O, and taking a look at this vehicle. But the vehicle will be used for countdown tests, training, and then whatever other NASA shenanigans they get up to. But this is a really cool looking vehicle. And of course, it'll be modified to fit the astronauts and all the gear that they got to wear. But still, it's pretty awesome. Like this, you can hear the excitement in my voice on this. This is going to happen in June of 2023, although they're probably testing it out now. And if you're not aware, Canoe has several different vehicles in development. They have the lifestyle vehicle, which has about a range of 250 miles, 188 cubic feet of interior. And just kind of for reference, the ID Buzz, which is Volkswagen's van, has 138 cubic feet of interior. So quite a bit more in the Canoe. And it comes in different flavors, this lifestyle vehicle. There's a configuration for delivery. There's the base configuration, premium, and adventure, which I'm curious to know what it is all included in the adventure. So pretty cool news there. And thank you, Chip, for passing along. I still need to reply to your email. Sorry about that. It's been a crazy couple of days. But I do appreciate you passing along. Oh, you know what? As I scroll down, we have one more news story, and I promise this is the last one more. We talked last week about Elon saying that the SEC, Security Exchange Commission, knew that the funding was actually secured for Tesla to go private, but they decided to open an investigation anyway, which caused the banks to tell Elon and Tesla that they would not loan to them unless they settled with the SEC. Elon didn't have a lot of really nice things to say about the San Francisco office of the SEC. Well, it turns out a federal judge has ruled that Elon's tweets of taking Tesla private were false and misleading. So I will keep you updated as this saga continues, but pretty interesting turn of events this week. I'm just going to give you the real quick basic Patreon plug this week. If you want to support this show, go to patreon.com/kilowatt or supportkilowatt.com, and you can see all the options we have up there for supporting the show. And now let's jump into the earnings call, which was very much like a Reddit Ask Me Anything. It was just like a really cool laid back earnings call. It was just like, it really just kind of felt like we were all just huddled around the executive team and we had our bean bags and we were nice and warm and safe. And we got a lot of good information from this earnings call. I think I said this at the top of the show, but this is honestly like one of the best earnings calls that Tesla's had in a while, in terms of, information that we can use as, you know, fans of the company and investors of the company. So let's go ahead and jump in. Zach Kirkhorn is going to do opening remarks, and Zach's opening remarks actually were before Elon's on this earnings call, which is not typical. So let's go ahead and listen to Zach.
Q1 was a challenging but extremely successful quarter for the company. Despite numerous supply interruptions, including shutdowns at our Shanghai factory and nearby suppliers due to COVID, we've continued making progress and achieved our best ever vehicle deliveries. Last quarter, we demonstrated a series of new financial records, including revenue, gross margins, operating margin, and bottom line profitability. GAAP automotive gross margin reached 32.9% and for the first time exceeded 30% when excluding regulatory credits. Higher pricing continues to positively impact our financials as we make progress delivering cars in our growing backlog. Note that for most vehicles, our delivery wait times are quite long. Thus, cars delivered in Q1 generally carried pricing set in prior quarters and at levels lower than cars being ordered today. Our per unit vehicle costs increased as well. Inflation, raw material prices, expedites, and logistics costs continues to impact our cost structure. Factory shutdowns also occurred with little to no notice, hence we are unable to take action to plan those interruptions in a cost-efficient manner. Additionally, we saw a slight mix shift towards more profitable vehicles, including the Model Y. We also recognized a one-time benefit of $288 million from credit revenue relating to a regulatory change in the U.S. CAFE penalty, without of which credit revenue would have declined compared to the same period last year. The energy business has continued to be impacted by macro conditions more severely than the vehicle business. Our storage products are in need of chip supply, and new import processes have impacted supply of certain components for our solar systems, which is reflected in our solar volume for the quarter. OpEx as a percentage of revenue continues to reduce, driven by higher revenue, lower stock-based comp expense, and other items. As a result of our ongoing improvements in operating leverage, we achieved a record operating margin of over 19%. Note that commissioning costs for our factories are in R&D, as Berlin started production in late March and Austin in early April. These costs will be in automotive COGS going forward, given these factories are now producing customer sellable cars. Our free cash flows have remained quite strong, yet were impacted by working capital related to lower than planned production. Additionally, we have reduced our debt, excluding product financing, to nearly zero. Looking ahead in the immediate term, a few things to keep in mind for Q2. First, we've lost about a month of build volume out of our factory in Shanghai due to COVID-related shutdowns. Production is resuming at limited levels, and we're working to get back to full production as quickly as possible. This will impact total build and delivery volume in Q2. Second, as I've mentioned before, Austin and Berlin are just starting their ramps, and thus those inefficiencies will start to flow through our gross margins in Q2. Third, we do have higher ASPs in our backlog, which will help to offset some of these headwinds. We continue to drive towards further strengthening of our financials in the second half of the year and believe our 50% or above growth rate remains achievable for the year.
All right. These opening remarks were a great precursor to what's going to come on the rest of the call. And I don't really have anything to add at this point because you're going to hear about it later. Elon's opening remarks were similar to Zach's, so I didn't include them in this part of the show, but you can still go back at ir.tesla.com and you can listen to the whole thing if you want. But here's kind of a rundown. Some of the things that Elon added. Elon thinks that Optimus, which is the robot, will be worth more than FSD someday. Volume production of the Cybertruck will begin in 2023. Volume production of the Robotaxi will begin in 2024. And this is just my opinion. If Tesla hasn't figured out full self-driving, and if it's not feature complete or approved by, you know, local governments to drive on the roads, I don't see them entering volume production for this vehicle. They might have some test vehicles out there, but I just can't see producing a bunch of these robo-taxis and not being able to use them the way that Tesla wants to use them. Now, since we're talking about full self-driving, let's talk about the full self-driving timeline and the data behind Tesla's optimistic outlook on full self-driving.
And the first, if you ask your question, is Elon has historically provided FSD timelines with not optimal accuracy. We love its optimism for 2022 release, but is there any data Tesla can share with investors to help them make their own conclusions on progress being made, interventions per mile driven, or any other data?
Sure. with respect to full self-driving, of any technology development I've ever been involved in, I've never really seen more kind of false dawns or where it seems like we're going to break through, but we don't, as I've seen in full self-driving. And ultimately what it comes down to is that to solve full self-driving, you actually have to solve real-world artificial intelligence, which nobody has solved. The whole road system is made for biological neural nets and eyes. And so actually, when you think about it, in order to solve full self-driving, we have to solve neural nets and cameras to a degree of a capability that is on par with and really exceeds humans. I think we will achieve that this year. The best way to reach your own assessment is to join the Tesla full self-driving beta program. We have over 100,000 people right now enrolled in that program, and we expect to broaden that significantly this year. So that's my recommendation, is join the full self-driving beta program and experience it for yourself, and take note of the rate of improvement with every release. And we put out a new release roughly every 2 weeks. And you'll see a little bit of two steps forward, one step back. But overall, the rate of improvement is incredibly quick. So that's my recommendation for reaching your own assessment, is literally try it.
Okay, we heard a little bit of this spiel last week. You'd think if after a few times of thinking that you had a certain problem solved and then finding out that there were more issues and you created more problems trying to solve the one problem, you'd be a little bit more cautious about publicly announcing when you think you would actually, you know, solve the wider problem. So Tesla and Elon, they've been burned so many times on Elon's optimistic, you know, where it's just around the corner. It's just around the corner. I don't know why you wouldn't just say, hey, listen, this is hard. It's not around the corner. It's at least 3 years away. And if you get it in 3 years or within that 3 year time frame, then great. And if you don't, you know, you got to push it back. But saying it's, you know, coming by the end of the year, we've been hearing that for at least 6 years that I've been doing this podcast, and it's not here yet. So, and then Elon mentioned that if you want to know what full self-driving can do, and by the way, I think full self-driving is fantastic. There's some scary moments, but as a general rule, I think it's pretty good. But anyway, Elon mentions that if you want to know how good it is, then sign up for the full self-driving beta. To which I say, what if the investors that are asking this question don't have access to a Tesla? Maybe they don't own one, and maybe they don't know anybody who has one. I think that's a little insensitive isn't the right word. I think it's myopic isn't the right word either. I think it's silly just to assume that an investor already owns a Tesla. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Maybe they can't afford a Tesla, but they can afford to invest. I don't think that's a good answer is where I'm going with this. The next question is about the impact of the Shanghai shutdown. And then there's a second question, follow-up question about localized Model 3 in Europe. So let's listen to that.
How much of an impact will the production shutdown in Shanghai have in Q2? What is the timeline for localizing the Model 3 in Europe, or will newer models be prioritized in Berlin?
Well, the we did lose a lot of important days of production, and there are sort of upstream supplier challenges where a lot of suppliers also lost many days of production. But our Tesla Shanghai, Giga Shanghai, is coming back with a vengeance. So I think notwithstanding new issues that arise, I think we will see record output per week from Giga Shanghai this quarter, albeit we are missing a couple of weeks. So, that means that most likely vehicle production in Q2 will be similar to Q1, maybe slightly lower, but it's also possible we may pull a rabbit out of the hat and be slightly higher, but it's be call it roughly on par. But then Q3 and Q4 will be substantially higher. So it seems likely that we'll be able to produce over 1.5 million cars this year. That's my best guess. And then Model 3, it's important for new factories to be focused on and have the least amount of complexity and variation, which is why Giga Berlin, Giga Texas are focused on the Model Y. It's from the point at which you have a factory complete and you're making a small number of units to the point where it's producing high quality vehicles in volume is 9 to 12 months from start of production. So now hopefully we're getting better at that ramp, so maybe it's a little less, but to get to sort of the 5,000 a week level is typically taken us around 12 months from start of production.
All right, that's good to know. Once a factory opens, whether that's the battery factories or the automotive part of the factories, it doesn't matter. It takes 9 to 12 months to hit volume production. What I found interesting was that volume production is considered 5,000 a week, which to me seems like a smaller number than I would expect. But since I don't know anything about auto manufacturing, maybe that's a reasonable number. I have no idea. It just seems small. And especially when you consider like how many people are waiting to get their Teslas. And I'm sure Tesla would like to build as many, Model 3s, Model Ys, S and Xs as they possibly can. But it just seems like a small number. All right, here, let's see. Our next clip is actually really interesting. They're going to talk about raw materials exposure, which I don't know what that means. But more importantly, they're going to talk about the price hikes. So let's listen to that.
How much raw material exposure do you have, measured roughly in percentage of cost of goods sold, for example, in a given quarter versus 1 to 2 years out, both direct and indirect? Separately, how do you think about price increases versus prioritizing higher mix vehicles going forward?
On the price increase front, I should mention that it may seem like maybe we're being unreasonable about increasing the prices of our vehicles, given that we had record profitability this quarter. But the wait list for our vehicles is quite long. And some of the vehicles that people will order, the wait list extends into next year. So our prices of vehicles ordered now are really anticipating supplier and logistics cost growth that we're aware of or believe will happen over the next 6 to 12 months. So that's why we have the price increases today, because a car ordered today will arrive in some cases a year from now. So we have a very long wait list, we're obviously not demand limited. We are production limited by very much production limited.
Okay. So the price increases today are for vehicles that will be delivered a year from now. That makes sense, right? Tesla's got to stay afloat as a company, so they need to anticipate what the price of materials, logistics, and labor costs will be. And I'm sure there's other stuff in there that I don't understand. If Tesla sees or thinks that the prices will come down, will they start reducing the price of the vehicle a year in advance? Like they're increasing the price of the vehicle almost a year in advance with anticipation of prices rising. If they anticipate prices falling in a year, are they going to reduce that a year out, or are they going to wait until prices of materials and stuff has actually fallen to a certain point before they actually reduce the actual cost of the vehicle? So, like, I think it's great that Tesla's anticipating this, and I think that's very responsible. But on the other side, are they just going to be like, you know what, these are profits, we're going to take the profits because we know that prices are going to come down, and eventually we'll have to lower our prices for the vehicles because, you know, these commodity prices have come down. But yeah, also I'm curious as to if we'll ever see the model, let's say the Model Y and the Model 3. I'm curious if we'll ever see that those vehicles down to the base price of what they were when they first came out, or will Tesla just reduce them $2,000 or $3,000 and that'll be the price, even if materials are much, much lower and they can, because obviously they can sell them at $60,000 in the case of the Model Y. They can sell them at $60,000 a piece and people are lining up for it. Let's see here. One of the questions that I cut out, which I thought was a good question, just Elon had a really quick answer for it. Why not fight dealership laws at a federal level instead of state by state? So Elon said there wasn't much interest by legislators at the federal level to help them out with this. So they have to, they just go by state to fight these battles. In the United States, we have states' rights. So there are certain things that the state can do, and it's a little bit harder for the federal government to tell them what to do. So that's why we have like a carrot and stick system. So if the federal government wants a state to do something, they'll just like withhold like highway funds until the state relents, that kind of thing. All right, our next clip is a good one. It's all about 800-volt systems, and is Tesla going to convert to an 800-volt system for their vehicles? So let's go ahead and listen.
Yeah, sure, on the 800-volt thing. So it's really a case-by-case thing. For the smaller platform vehicles like 3 and Y, there's some wins and losses with 800 volts. Not everything is better. And so we look at that platform and, you know, we're not like ignoring the reality that you can go to a higher voltage, but there's nothing really encouraging us to do so on that platform. It's really about mass and power. And as you look at bigger vehicles, there are some advantages on those bigger vehicles.
Yeah, so, I would just quantify that basically, our estimate is that going from 400 to 800 volts might save $100.
Yep.
It's not really moving the needle.
And you're changing many things.
Yes, but
exactly. From the charging infrastructure all the way through the entire vehicle system.
Yes.
To get maybe $100.
Yes, exactly. So, in the U.S., you've got 110 volts household power or voltage, and then in your most parts of the world, you have like sort of 220. But really, it doesn't make that much of a difference, and appliances work pretty much as well, you know, in, say, Europe as they do in the U.S.
Yeah.
So the advantages are small, and the cost is high. Like, so you say, like long term, like years from now, does it make sense to probably move to an 800 volt architecture? I said probably, but it really needs a very big vehicle volume to pay for all the costs of changing from 400 to 800 volts. And then, if you want to continue with
I was just going to say that 100 volts is also kind of like a spreadsheet exercise, right?
$100
is roughly like a spreadsheet exercise. Like, you know, that you have to get through the full program to the end to see that maybe it's been whittled away to 50 or less.
On
bigger vehicles where you're talking about higher power on the charging side or higher power from the battery to the power electronics, or you need more torque, so the current requirements go up. There's a little bit more semiconductor and actual, like, you know, conductor savings of going to the higher voltage. So we do consider that for Semi and Cybertruck, but for the 3Y platform where we've got everything running and the benefit is questionably small.
Yeah, it's basically zero for Robotaxi.
Yeah, for Robotaxi, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Okay. For a company that doesn't want to talk about Robotaxi and they want to save that for a big announcement next year, they talk a lot about Robotaxi. And I'm guessing that this is just going to be a single-seater clown car, and that's what Robotaxi is going to be. Or Homer Simpson's car. It's just going to be this monstrosity that Homer Simpson made. I think that right now their systems are built on 400 volt systems, and I think it would just, you know, I can see why it wouldn't make financial sense to convert everything to 800 volt, especially for the smaller cars. They did mention that Cybertruck and Semi, an 800 volt system makes more sense. I have an idea as to why an 800 volt system is better than a 400 volt system, which, and a lot of it has to do with charging, but I don't know enough at this point to speak about it with any sort of authority. So I'm going to research that and get back to you on that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Our next clip is how it will Tesla secure raw materials to scale to extreme size. And they don't really go into what extreme size is. So I guess we just have to use our imagination, but let's listen to the clip.
And the next question is, how does Tesla plan to secure raw materials required to scale to extreme size?
Yeah, so this is something we think about quite a lot. It depends what extreme size means, but you know, certainly if you're like looking at, like, say, the 5, 10, $20 million, try 5, 10, $20 million vehicle levels, you really have to analyze the sort of macroeconomic, you know, just like what is the tonnage of lithium that you need, of nickel, of iron phosphate, of graphite, separators, electrolytes, electrolyte, you know, it really need to think of just macro tonnage. And we need to think about this for the world as a whole, because, you know, just we want to figure out what are the limiting factors for accelerating the advent of a sustainable energy future. And whatever those limiting factors are, Tesla will take action on those limiting factors. So right now we think mining and refining lithium appears to be a limiting factor. And it certainly is responsible for quite a bit of cost growth in the cells. It's, I think, the single biggest cost growth item right now, certainly on a percentage basis. Although just for those who don't totally know this, the actual content of lithium in a lithium-ion cell is maybe around 2-3% of the cell. So yeah,
5 kg a car.
Yeah, it's not 5 kilograms exactly. It's not. It's called a lithium-ion cell, but by far the most expensive and heaviest item in the cell is the cathode. so that's the nickel or the iron phosphate. So we're looking carefully at all of the raw materials and trying to figure out how we can accelerate the total amount of raw materials needed to transition the world to sustainability. And I think we don't have enough time on this call to really go through all those details, but we are thinking about these things, and we think we'll have some exciting announcements in the months to come.
Yeah. One thing I want to call out is, like, we're also, you know, committed to recycling at all of our cell factories. Yeah. We're recycling 50 tons a week right now in Reno and ramping to 150 with all of that reclaimed material going directly back into our cathode supply chain. So we're looking at the beginning and end of life needs here.
Yeah. And that's true. Like, since Reno, we built Gigafactory, we started doing that with batteries. But as we built newer factories or vehicles, for example, Giga Texas here, where we are today, we said it was all of its non-yielded or scrap aluminum from the stamping shop directly into the casting shop. We regrind any plastic that comes out. And so we're really concerned about raw materials, not just like mining them and consuming them, but when we get them in the door, using all 100% of them.
Yeah, Lars, that's a great point. So we're installing melt furnaces for aluminum, like, so for, you know, for the Model Y that we build here at Giga Texas has both a front and a rear body casting. So we're casting almost 2/3 of the body. Then that's cast, it's high pressure die cast aluminum, so we can take both aluminum, both scrap from the casting machine, and the gating that comes out, and put that back, just really toss that back into the aluminum melting pot, and then, as Lars was saying, also take any stampings and any other aluminum scrap, and also throw that in the melting pot. We've also figured out that we can use wheels from practically any car. So we're going to be recycling cast aluminum wheels from legacy gasoline cars as well, and throwing that in the melting pot for our aluminum cast body of Model Y, and also we'll be moving to the sort of cast front and rear body, in all vehicles over time. Well, actually, maybe not SX, but 3Y.
All right. I think this is really cool. First of all, Tesla's recycling game seems to be on point. I love that they're recycling wheels from ICE cars. That's pretty cool. When Tesla was first building the 2170 cells, when they were ramping up and they were going through some production hell, not only with the Model 3, but with the 2170 cells, we heard a lot of stories coming out of Giga Nevada where there was just a ton of waste just sitting out in the yard, and Tesla wasn't doing anything about it. And it's good to hear that, you know, they're pretty much any sort of scrap that they can they can recycle and you know, melt down and create a new part with, they're doing it. So that's good to hear. So I want to ask you guys and gals a question, based on what they were saying in this clip. Does it sound like to you that they are wanting to create their own mining company or do their own mining within Tesla? Email me, Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com, and let me know what you think. It sounded like to me they wanted to do this, but I'd like to know your thoughts. And then also, I thought it was interesting that there's only about 5 kilograms of lithium or 11 pounds of lithium in a battery pack. That was pretty fascinating. I knew that they didn't use very much lithium in terms for the battery packs, or each cell didn't have that much lithium. I didn't know it was so little, so that's pretty cool. One of the questions that I cut out was about the 4680 cell run rate at Fremont and Giga Texas. And basically right now, they're not at volume production. They still have some things to solve. Elon thinks, and the team, they think that the volume production will be, you know, first quarter of 2023. And maybe it will, maybe it won't, I don't know. If you buy a Model Y from Giga Texas, then you don't necessarily get the 4680 battery cells with the structural battery pack. You might actually get a Model Y with 2170 cells, depending on how many 4680 cells they have laying around. So that's good to know. All right, let's go ahead and jump to our next clip here.
You know, one of the initial goals of Model 3 way back when was to have an EV that was affordable for a wide portion of the market. And, you know, we know prices are much higher now, just given the supply constraints. Prices are higher for all other automakers. We know that there's inflation that you're battling through, and some of that needs to be passed through to the price of the vehicles. And you're going to be supply constrained for the foreseeable future. So it's sort of a moot point. But given the goal long-term of making EVs more widely available to the masses over time, how do you look at the progression of prices over time?
We absolutely want to make EVs as affordable as possible. It's been very difficult with the, I think inflation is at like a 40 or 50 year high. And I think the official numbers actually understate the true magnitude of inflation. So, and that inflation appears to be likely to continue for at least the remainder of this year is what, when we're talking to suppliers are under severe cost pressure. So, and in some cases we're seeing suppliers request 20 to 30% cost increases for parts from last year to the end of the to the end of this year. So it's there's a lot of cost pressure there. That's why we raised our prices, because we when things are this uncertain with respect to inflation, if you know it's high, then we've got orders that go out a year or more in some cases, then we have to anticipate those cost increases. I think especially with the robotaxi and autonomy, I think we'll end up providing consumers with by far the lowest cost per mile of transport that they've ever experienced. With the robotaxi, like maybe 5 to 10 times lower cost per mile, it's really quite substantial.
And therefore accessible to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, looking at some of our projections, it would appear that a robotaxi ride will cost less than a bus ticket, a subsidized bus ticket, or subsidized subway ticket.
once again, for a product that they don't want to talk about, they are talking a lot about the robotaxi. And here's what I want from the robotaxi. I want the Optimus robot in the driver's seat driving the robotaxi. As a matter of fact, maybe this is how they solve full self-driving, because earlier in the episode, Elon mentioned that roads are hard because they were basically designed for us humans. And honestly, I don't know if I brought this up or not, but like roads go back, you know, Roman times, like a long time ago, 2000 plus years ago, they're building roads. And over time, the rules of the road have kind of been ingrained into us as humans. So I can see where this is a kind of a difficult thing to solve for, especially when you consider, you know, there's different traffic laws in different countries and all that other stuff. So I get that they're having a hard time, but maybe they're making the artificial human to be able to drive in full self-driving mode without making mistakes. I know that that's not practical, but I want that to be true. How great would it be? The only way full self-driving actually works would be to have like an Android robot sitting there and driving you around. That'd be pretty cool as far as I'm concerned. The next clip is all about inflation, the supply chain, and will the constraints affect EV adoption? This is a really good question. So let's listen in.
Hi, everybody. I'm trying to just parse out your comments about the inflation and constrained supply and battery feedstocks and the initiatives that you are working on internally to secure these materials. It sounds like you're optimistic about Tesla's ability to solve this for Tesla. Do you see this as a constraint on EV adoption more broadly?
Yeah, absolutely. What's sort of keeping our costs down, at least in the short term, is that we have long-term contracts with suppliers, but those long-term contracts will obviously run out, and then we'll start to see potentially significant cost increases. But at a macro, sort of looking at the world as a whole and saying, okay, what does it take for Earth to transition to sustainable energy faster? It's fundamentally the fundamental limiting factor is the output of the cell output. At what rate can lithium-ion cells increase the gigawatt hours per year? That is the fundamental limiting factor. So that will move as fast as the slowest, least lucky element of the whole supply chain. Currently, we see that as being a challenge with lithium. And it's not that there's a shortage of lithium ore in the world. Lithium is present almost everywhere. It's a very common element. However, you still need to dig up the ore, or dig up basically the spodumene or whatever the clay with the lithium, and then you need to go through a whole series of refinement steps, and that's a lot of industrial equipment that's needed to refine lithium ore to lithium that can be used as lithium hydroxide or lithium carbonate in the battery cell. So we think we're going to need to help the industry on this front. But the industry is growing fast. And I'd certainly, you know, encourage entrepreneurs out there who are looking for opportunities to get into the lithium business. The lithium margins right now are practically software margins. Zach, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're seeing cases where the spot lithium price is 10 times higher than the cost of extraction. We're talking 90% margins here. Can more people please get into the lithium business? Do you like minting money? The lithium business is for you.
I love minting money, or I would love the opportunity to mint money. I don't think anybody's going to give me money so that I can build a business to mint money in lithium. But if Elon would like to give me some of his money to do that, I'd be happy to give it a shot. No promises. Let's see. I don't really have anything to add to that. I thought it was really interesting, though. I did cut out a question, and it was, will Tesla expand Giga Nevada? And the answer was yes, but they didn't specifically say what they were going to do with it. But maybe, you know, the semi comes out of there. We don't know. But our next clip is all about raw material supply build out. And I don't know why, but the raw materials questions are really fascinating to me. So if you're bored of these, please let me know, because I won't include them in future shows. But I think they're just fascinating, though. The whole thing, I think, is just super fascinating. So let's go ahead and listen.
Oh, great. Do you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Just to follow up, sorry to keep going on the raw material issue on the battery side, but obviously seems pretty important. How quickly can raw material supply be built? Because my understanding is it takes many years to build that out. So are we just sort of facing, when do you think we see a lithium shortage or a nickel shortage? And is there even enough time to build that sort of mining capacity in place? And then related, you know, how quickly can you switch to like LFP, you know, for the nickel issue?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take the LFP question. Like, you know, and it says so in our letter, but like half of our products were LFP last quarter, which shows how quickly we were able to respond to, well, honestly, it wasn't because of a raw material shortage, but just because it seemed like the right thing to do, we could change our cathode chemistry. And there's more to be done on the cathode side, and we are actively pursuing it to give us substitution flexibility in response to market conditions between the other cathodes that are out there that can be competitive in our vehicles, of which there are many options. So, you know, I guess what I would say is specifically on the cathode side, like flexibility is the way we're going to achieve this. And not all of the materials that go into cathodes are actually, first of all, hard to secure, like through mining or refining. And second of all, in many cases are like very plentiful already, like huge scale. And, you know, if all of the batteries in the world use those cathodes, it's less than a 1% increase in total annual output. So that's the cathode side. You know, I think Elon already spent a lot of time talking about lithium. It really depends on the resource. Some resources, like just getting rocks out of the ground, you know, expanding the amount of rocks that you're getting out of the ground is, you know, maybe a little bit of paperwork and some additional sort of blasting and trucking operations. The refining is maybe where there's, you know, it's a little bit more chunky to bring it online, but also the refining doesn't, it's not like an oil refinery. It's a much, much smaller operation to refine lithium out of spodumene or liquid, like a brine or a salt pond evaporation. So, you know, you're talking about a time scale of 1 to 2 years, and it's not like we haven't been talking to all of the lithium, you know, suppliers out there for many years. They have a lot of projects already in the pipeline to come online this year and next. Some of what's going on in the lithium market this year doesn't actually have truth to bear to the like fundamentals of supply and demand, which is also a little frustrating. But yeah, if we look past this year or next year and into 2030, when we need 15 to 20 terawatt hours of this stuff to, you know, get on the growth trajectory, stay on the growth trajectory we're on, we need everybody to do more in the lithium space than they currently are.
I did think it was interesting that half of the vehicles that Tesla sold were on the LFP battery chemistry. I didn't think it would be quite so many, so that was interesting. One of the things that I cut out here was a question, will Tesla be opening the Tesla charging network in the United States? And the short answer is yes. And then our final clip for this week is Tesla insurance update. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Okay, that's helpful. And for my second question, could you share any more details on Tesla insurance in particular as you're rolling it out in more states? Are there any metrics you can share on what take rates have been like and how do profitability margins on the insurance offering compare to the corporate average? Thank you.
So we just launched Tesla insurance for real-time insurance in Virginia, Colorado, and Oregon earlier this week. Maybe one stat that I'll share. So Texas is our longest standing real-time insurance market. But based upon the information that we have, Tesla is the second largest insurer of Teslas in the state of Texas. And possibly by the end of this quarter, maybe early next quarter, we'll be the largest insurer of Teslas. And so, you know, the customer reception to this has been quite positive. And I was reading social media on Monday after we launched in the three new states. A lot of folks were reporting their stories of saving quite substantial amounts of money relative to their previous insurance. And so we're quite encouraged by that. And we're working as quickly as we can to get to 80% of customers having access to a Tesla insurance product by the end of this year in the United States, at which point we'll pivot our attention to expansion outside of the U.S. The other thing I'll say on insurance is with these three new states, the model is different because we are now the underwriter and we're also now holding the risk. And so with those states, we are a fully vertically integrated provider of insurance from systems and financials. With respect to the financials of the program, it's still very early. And so, you know, as the program gets more scale, happy to share more information on that.
And one side note is that we are seeing that the having real-time feedback for driving habits is actually resulting in Tesla owners driving the cars in a safer way. So, you know, because they can see they get real-time feedback on, okay, this is affecting my insurance rate or it isn't. And so, when people see a real-time score and realize, oh, if I make the following changes in my driving habits, then I pay less in insurance, then they have a real-time feedback loop for driving, for safer driving, and an incentive to do so. So it is actually, what we're seeing is it is causing people to drive their cars in a safer manner, which is also not good.
It's safer on average, what we see in the data, to Elon's point, and premiums are lower. We see that in the take rate data. We have extremely high retention for customers who experience the product. And I think I've talked about this in the past, but this has become a real passion program for us.
Yeah.
You know, for these benefits, it's bigger than just the economics. We're trying to do a good thing here. For our customers, save people money and make the roads a little bit safer.
Yeah, I think it improves just overall macroeconomic efficiency. It's also a feedback loop for Tesla because we see if there is a crash, large or small, we sort of see exactly what that cost, and now we think about how can we change the design of the car or the software in order to minimize the probability of that, accident. Because most accidents are minor, but how do we have those accidents occur less frequently, and how do we make the repair associated with that accident super fast? Like, aspirationally, it'd be like same day repair for a collision. Which is just night and day difference compared to sometimes having to wait for a month while insurance claims are settled and figured out, and because Tesla is also doing collision repair.
The feedback loop is instant.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we do claims management in-house, and so we receive the notification that there's an accident. We work to prepare the estimate, and we can, with the support of our customers, use our collision centers to do the repair.
Yeah.
And so it's, full end-to-end visibility and all of that, to Elon's point. We can then identify areas of cost inefficiency, feed those back to engineering teams or elsewhere, software teams, actually improve the product, which lowers the cost of insurance, improves reliability of the product. So it's a full circle.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, basically the customer experience is just vastly better because if there's an accident, there's no argument. We repair it immediately. And this is as compared to arguing with an insurance company and then a claims adjuster and then a collision repair center. And this can be a nightmare, basically. So we want to try to turn a nightmare into a dream with Tesla Insurance.
All right. I think that was a really good Tesla Insurance update. I like how they are doing, like, they're doing the insurance, they're doing the repair. You know, there's no middleman. You're just dealing with Tesla, and they're trying to give you the best customer experience that they can, right? I think that's great. I'm a little skeptical that there's going to be, you know, same-day repair, even if it's minor, unless they're just going to be buffing something out while you're waiting, which takes, you know, depending on how bad, you know, the scratch is or whatever, that, you know, that could take a few minutes, and that's it. But other than that, I thought it was a good update. And that is where we're going to leave it here. Another Herculean episode. This is a very long episode. I hope you all enjoyed it, though. I had a good time putting it together for you. If you want to email me, you can find me at Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. If you want to find me on Twitter, it's at 918digital. And my DMs are open if you want to contact me that way. And then also, I mean, what a great last couple of weeks for news. Like, we had a little bit of a dry spell, but man, it is just like rolling in. It's been a lot of fun covering electric vehicles and Tesla over the last couple of weeks. It's good. It's just been a lot of fun. I can't say enough about it. Anyway, as it gets later, I start babbling. So I'm babbling. So I'm going to let you go. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I will see you next Friday.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have this quarter. So thank you very much for all your great questions, and we'll speak to you again in 3 months. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.